The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
And welcome, as always, to episode of Wrestling on Rap. I am your host. My name is Patrick Ketsa, and joining me as always, Mr. Eric Rock. Yes, I keep forgetting the number.
You act like I have any clue what number we're on. I just know that we've been doing this crap now for almost 2 years.
Well, it depends on who you ask.
No, between the two different stations that we've done it for and the various hiatuses they're in, we're coming up on about 2 years.
Oh, well, if you're going both stations, then it's over 2 years. We're going on 2.5 years.
Yeah, but there were a lot of hiatuses. Don't hiatus if you ain't us.
You're becoming a penis in my... Never mind.
So! Clive freaking Iowa again, huh?
Why go to Six Flags when you can go to Seven?
I tell you what, man, it's like we have a really bad obsession with really small cities in some of these reviews we've done.
You know what? This is a little bit different for us because we made it a habit of covering companies' first shows. So we figured, what the hell, why not go for a company's second show? So this seems to kind of be the idea here, and as we know, we were supposed to cover that actually at the start of the month. However, medical issues that we will keep private prevent us from doing that.
Sorry. Well, I appreciate you considering my privacy.
Okay.
I'm covering. Move on.
Anyway. But yes, as Harry mentioned, we are going back to the Seven Flags Event Center in Clive, Iowa, not Des Moines, as we will be covering... Huh?
Des Moines-ish.
Des Moines is H? Oh, wait, that was last week, sorry.
All right, that's the early lead for you.
As we will be covering the Wrestling Revolver's second ever show, Iowa Goes Lucha, which features...
Underground.
You beat me to the point. Because it seems like Lucha Underground is attempting to take over. That's wrong company, I know. We can't. The Wrestling Revolver at this stage, considering that two main matches. Chavo Marty Cloth, and then the main event, Machine vs. Machine, as the Every Machine, Joel Green, Mr. TMSI, and I think that's all except for him, Brian Cage, or a Machine Paul Cage, takes on the New Horror, the Death Machine, the Worldwide Desperado, Sammy Callahan.
Well, there's a couple other Lucha Underground stars scattered throughout the show as well.
Well, no, I'm aware. I'm just talking about just the two main matches.
This is true.
So, ha! And besides, at the time that this show was done, I think a lot of them weren't actually in Lucha Underground yet, because remember, this was last October.
Well, in fairness, at the time this show was done, one half of the main event wasn't in Lucha Underground yet either.
Sure. And one
because it was
only
supposed, as we find out a little bit later on in the show, it was supposed to be Brian Cage, Taylor, taking on Rey Fénix.
Can't believe you just brought that up. Wrong company, by the way.
He's a fighting Taylor boy to me.
Yeah. The fighting Taylor boys?
It's around the era of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla that I own. And I'm standing by it. All right, let's do this, shall we?
Yes, we shall. So it
is. Before we get to it, though.
Huh?
Before we get into the actual review here, though, let's remind everybody that tonight's episode is a presentation of the W2M Network. www.w2mnet.com in order to find the latest from all of your favorite Wrestling to the Max people, myself, Patrick, with our written reviews, eventually, Sean, Paul, Gary, Angel, Tom, Rick, you name it, you can find them there. They're at www.w2mnet.com.
And you're better at this one than I am. I should have done the website plug.
Yeah, I kind of have this one memorized, even when I do screw it up. We are sponsored tonight by the Madhouse Toy Chest, stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest. If you are a fan of anything wrestling, DVDs, action figures, VHS tapes, magazines, posters, and more, you can find it inside of the Madhouse Toy Chest. You can also find other non-wrestling DVDs, Blu-rays, video games, non-wrestling-related toys, pretty much anything you can think of. You can probably find it inside of the toy chest. The owner, Jason's a good close friend of the show. He's helped us out with several things here. And make sure that you mention you heard this advertisement here on Wrestling Unwrapped and receive a free gift with your purchase. That is stores.ebay.com/madhousetoychest.
That reminds me, I have to talk to Jason about something.
You need to talk to him about several somethings, but that's neither here nor there. Carry on.
Fair enough. So, it is fan versus... Try that again. Take two.
Stop. Rewind. Carry on.
Bull heard nothing. So, it is fan versus fan. A. Machine versus machine. As two men essentially try to just beat the high holy hell off each other. As Lucha Underground takes over the Revolver. And as we always do, Carrie, are you ready?
I am. No, he said, sorry, course of habit.
Can you hear
this is what happens when you go back and watch stuff from the Attitude Era on the network.
Speaking of which, I think they're getting another DVD out soon. Anyway, here are the results. For the Wrestling Revolver, Iowa Go Lucha.
A fourth? Jesus. Anyway, all right, let's do this. As Patrick mentioned, we are live at the Seven Flags Event Center in Clive, Iowa. These are your results from October 28th, 2016, as Wrestling Revolver presents Iowa Goes Lucha, Underground. Your opening contest sees the Carolina Madman, or the Carolina Caveman, excuse me, Trevor Lee pinning Darby Allin with a roll-up reversal with a tight assist at 5 minutes and 40 seconds. Connor Braxton pins Clayton Danes Jackson with the hoverboard people's elbow. Do I have something to say about that? At 6 minutes and 33 seconds.
I knew you were going to.
Treeton wins a three-way single-fall match, pinning Gringo Loco, who I think was one half of the AIW Tag Team Champions for a while, with a 450 splash at 10 minutes and 5 seconds. I think he forms a team with Crazy Pain in AIW called Crazy Loco or something like that. Anywho, the Man Scout, Jake Manning, pins Jessica Havoc at... Say what?
Steve Payne.
Okay, yeah. The Man Scout, Jake Manning, pins Jessica Havoc with a double leg cradle with the ropes and an assist from Samantha Heights at 10 minutes and 37 seconds.
Do I have something to say about that one.
The AR Fox Scramble match is won by... A.R. Fox, well, who'd have freaking thunk it? Pinning Jason Cade with a cutthroat brainbuster. I'd imagine that move has a name. I did not get around to looking it up. All right, let me not screw this up because I write them differently in the notebook than what they go as. The artist formerly known as the Irish Airborne, now known as OI4K, Dave and Jake Crist defeat Desmond Xavier and Zachary Wentz at 15-11 when Jake pins Desmond Xavier with the double stomp spiked tombstone pile driver. The Obsession, Caleb Conley, pins Dirty Andy Dalton with a whiplash, fireman's carry Michinoku driver for the uninitiated, at 8 minutes and 30 seconds. Chavo Guerrero Jr. pins Marty the Moth Martinez Casas. Casas?
I don't know.
I think it's Casas. The ring announcer was shoddy at best. At 20 minutes and 25 seconds with a frog splash. And your main event, Machine versus Machine, Effin versus Death Machine, sees Mr. GMSI Brian Cage pin Sami Callihan at 12 minutes and 2 seconds with Weapon X. Patrick?
Thank you, Harry.
I got them all in. All right. Much like Cage,
so
I got
your,
my
you stuff, got your
in.
Stuff in.
Beat you to it. Bite me. Anywho. Going to be one of those shows, Patrick. I can tell already.
Oh, yeah. And it absolutely is. Also, I was stalling because I know that the Double Stomp Tombstone has a name, but for the absolute life of me, I can't think of it.
Well, I know that the Death Valley driver across the knees with the double stomp is called the Irish Air Raid.
Yeah, but that's obviously not the one we're looking for. Anyway.
Don't the Young Bucks call their double stomp tombstone the Meltzer driver?
They don't have a double stomp tombstone. The Meltzer driver is the springboard off the top assisted tombstone, but it's not a double stomp.
Oh, no, it's a front foot.
No. That one is the Indy Taker. The Meltzer driver is the front flip. It's springboard front flip. You know what? Screw the Young Bucks. I'm not here to talk about them. We're here to talk about OI4K and Sid Callahan and everybody else.
All right. What do you say we get to it here? This is your official review for the Wrestling Revolver Volume 2. This is Iowa Goes Lucha Underground.
Just for reference, folks, he's only adding the underground. The actual name of the show is Iowa Goes Lucha.
That is 100% correct. I will take complete ownership of that. It's still funny to me, damn it.
And nobody else. Anyway, opening contest, Darby Allin versus the Carolina Caveman. By the way, did you just mess that up and call him the Carolina Madman, or is he actually called the Carolina Madman? I've only heard him as Caveman.
I may have guffawed and called him the Carolina Madman before correcting myself.
Okay.
In other words, I fudged that up.
All righty.
Oops.
This one seems a little messy. I don't really know too much about Darby Allin. I honestly, before hearing about him being on this show, I had never even heard of him, and I haven't really seen too much of him to know much about him. Obviously, you know, especially fans at AEW know I love BC Trevor Lee. Shut up. This seems a little messy at times, including one where trying to remember where they like boiling something up and Darby all set up on his head on the floor. And of course, Trevor Lee's just being his usual a-hole self, being, you know, TNA superstar. And I think at this point, Impact, X Division champion?
No, it's still TNA at this point. But yeah, I believe he might be, you know, the X Division champion at this point. So
he's one of the other X Division or tag team, because I think he held the tag team belts for Kippa-Kuffy.
Were he and Andrew Everett ever tag team champions? I don't think they were.
I know they can't serve, but it must be important. That's neither here nor there.
I wasn't huge on this match. I'm glad Trevor Lee got the win, but I wasn't really huge on this match only because of the fact that, like I said, it was fairly sloppy at times. But I think that's kind of owing up to Darby's, as far as I know, relative newness to the ring still.
Darby would become a name now in a vault these days because he's in the middle of a feud with All Eagle Ethan Page.
Sorry.
But, so Darby Allin would probably be best known for that. This was my first time seeing him as well because I am significantly behind on Evolve. So this would be my first time seeing Darby as well. And if this were to be the first time I would see him, I wouldn't have been especially impressed because it looked like he almost murdered himself attempting the springboard earlier in the match.
I think that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, there was an attempted springboard early in the match and it did not look good. But the match does turn out okay in the long run. I mean, it's not a great match or anything, but it's not the worst way to start off a wrestling show we've done.
Great. Now you got me thinking of what could be regarded as the worst first match we've ever had.
That would be the 4-on-2 handicap match from Spring Stampede.
Oh.
Asking you shall be reminded.
Speaking of which, because, you know, we always have to get a cheap plug in there anyway, I believe the poll for the 2000 episode of What Happened When with Tony Schiavone is going to be up on Monday. So I'm writing in Spring Stampede just to make Schiavone have to talk about it. Anyway.
If you guys get a chance, by all means, check out Spotify. Make sure you check out What Happened When with Conrad Thompson and Tony Schiavone. Oh, and the Bruce Pritchard podcast as well, Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard.
But before you do that, make sure you listen to our episode as we review Spring Stampede 2000. However, even more than usual, listener discretion is advised for that one because we couldn't hold back. It was so ridiculous. Anyway.
100% accurate. Match two.
Well, Trevor Lee picks up the win. I feel bad for him. Because Trevor Lee's damn good.
I don't dislike Darby Allin based off of what I have seen out of him in Evolve, but this wasn't a great showing for him.
Match number two, the Connor Preston. God. Takes on a band from Gainesville, Georgia, Clayton Gaines Jackson.
God. You know what the only thing missing there is? He should have been getting ready to fly. You are. No?
No.
Okay.
No.
Fine.
No. Did you really just compare Clayton Gaines to AJ Styles?
No, I did not. I'm just comparing their hometown. Anywho. Okay, so, you know how we've talked before about stupidest finishing moves we've ever seen in wrestling? I don't care what else happened in this match. This is what stands out to me the most. He used a hoverboard to hit a freaking people's elbow for a three count. A, your opponent looks retarded for laying there that long. B, you look like an idiot for not having a better finish. See, at least it was over. I mean over with the crowd, not over with me, because I clearly hated it.
Oh, that's honestly not even the best people's move I've seen. But, yeah, that finish. The match itself wasn't terrible, and it's kind of brave, so you kind of do what you're in for, especially like, you know, mid to late 2016 Connor Braxton. So you knew you were getting that hoverboard, whether you liked it or not. So
I just want to say that I personally prefer him more as the wrench Connor Braxton in CZW.
Fair enough. By the way, real quick,
Connor Braxton taking over the world with the hoverboard? Yeah, you can thank AAW for that one.
I know, it was an AAW where the video went viral. I'm aware.
I know. So
we blame you.
Huh?
We blame you for that.
Sure, me. Because I was totally not booing when he was doing it.
Anywho, back to the match itself. I didn't see anything from Clayton Jackson that would make me want to see him again. Looks just like another generic big guy. Connor Braxton's actually a pretty solid worker from what I've seen from him before. So, I mean, I'm willing to give him a chance, but, yeah, that hoverboard has to go. That may be one of the single most business-exposing things I've ever seen.
Now, remember, we're openly admitting the fact that, let's be honest, the people's elbow, the actual people's elbow itself, is pretty bad.
Corny.
Let's be honest. Huh?
Corny. The word you're looking for is corny.
Okay, corny. So let's take that gimmick, throw another gimmick on top of it that actually causes the move to be even longer. Because remember, you're on a hoverboard. You can't jump over your opponent like the Rock did. So he has to go around the opponent. And then he wins it with that.
Patrick,
you know what?
I literally couldn't even when I saw that.
You know what? I'm beginning to find that this crowd is awfully easy to entertain.
Well, it's in fairness, it's the middle of nowhere, Iowa. They probably don't get a lot of big-name independent shows in this area.
Yeah,
It's not exactly like it's an independent wrestling metropolis like the ones we live in Chicago, in your case, and outskirts Cleveland in mine.
Oh, no. Illinois still has their fence like that. You could argue that you can't get a crowd like that when AAW goes out to LaSalle, where Dreamwave used to be. So, there's, for every big metropolis, yeah, there's still small, you know, companies that are, you know, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore, Toto. That's just, but Connor Braxton ends up picking up the win. Moving on. Triton versus Gringo Loco. And how the hell did you not even mention the third guy in the match, Anthony Henry?
Did you know that he was originally not supposed to be the third man in the match?
I could barely tell that he actually was the third man in the match, but that's neither here nor there.
The original third man in the match was supposed to be DJ Z, Zima Ion, a.k.a. Shima Zion.
See yourself out. No.
Boo. Anywho.
I'm doing the theme right now that he does now. Anyway. Yeah, this was kind of the kind of match that WWE catches flack for. Triple threat match, one guy stays outside. Well, in this case, the same guy pretty much stayed outside almost the entire match.
Yeah, because Anthony Henry kept getting repeatedly super kicked. Have I told you how much I hate the overusage of super kicks in professional wrestling?
Wow, we're crapping on the young fucking guy.
Honestly, it's not even a Young Bucks thing. It's an oversaturation in general. Like, that move used to be That move used to be it when we were younger. Nowadays, we're lucky if it's a we're lucky if it's anything more than a double down.
If you're in a tag match, it usually takes about 8 super kicks for a quad down.
Oh, we'll talk about the super kick spot in that AR Fox Invitational here in a bit.
Oh, actually, I wasn't even talking about that. But, sure.
I will say, I kind of popped for that. I thought that was kind of funny, at least. Anyways, apparently Triton is an actual legitimate Mexican luchador.
Triton.
No, Triton. It's the Spanish pronunciation. Or the.
He does not weigh 6,000 pounds. Triton.
The ring announcer said tree Todd, and that's what I'm going with.
Apparently you weigh 6,000 pounds.
Apparently used to wrestle as Black Panther in CMLL or something along those lines. Hold on, I actually had his Wikipedia page up earlier. Well, I look back into that. You continue with your assessment of this match.
I mean, Triton and Gringo Loco actually were very well together. Gringo Loco, very America in terms of his outfit, was I would think along the lines of Road Dogg Jesse James. Sorry, but that's just how he kind of looked to me. But who incredibly well? Anthony Henry really barely got any offense in at all whatsoever, besides a little bit on the outside. That's it. So you could tell who the out-of-place man was in this match. You could have not had him in the match and still had done all the exact same stuff.
I think a lot of that ties into the fact that Henry was added last minute to this match since DJ Z got pulled from it.
Wonder why. But I thought the match was actually very good. Little iffy on the finish. Not the 450. The 450, it was great. It was nice to see that it was actually used as a finisher. But the fact of, I really think Anthony Henry beat that.
You think that he got in time to break up the count, but they wanted to go home there anyway? It looked like Henry broke up the three count to me, too.
So, apparently, Triton suffers from Bret Hart syndrome. I go to break up the pin. No, screw you. I'm still getting the pins.
Neto Blanco, what's his name in CMLL?
Ah, okay. Aside from that, though, I thought it was actually a very good match.
My problem with it is the exact thing that you mentioned at the top of this review of this particular match. It's the fact that they broke down into the two men in the ring, one man on the floor styling that seems to plague most triple threats these days. If you're going to book a triple threat match, you need to have them all interacting with each other rather than doing the two-in-one-out formula. I think it becomes too commonplace and it becomes overdone, and then once you get your audiences accustomed to that style of three-way there, they all just kind of tend to run together, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The last, truly good three-man triple threat that I can think of, where it was actually all three guys fighting, to the best of my ability that I can really think of, is the Royal Rumble triple threat.
Styles, Cena, and Brock? Or not Styles, Cena, and Brock.
Rollins.
Cena, Brock, and... I'm drawing
Rollins.
A blank here.
Rollins! Rollins! Seth Rollins! Seth freaking Rollins! Yes.
Okay, thank you. That was the night that AJ debuted. That's why I had him on my mind. No, it wasn't. It was the year before. Wow, I'm special. Moving on.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't Seth... No, Seth didn't have the belt yet. Brock had to have had the belt.
Brock would have had the belt. He was defending it because that was the year that Roman won the Rumble. let's not focus. Let's move on, shall we?
Speaking of booze, Man Scout
okay.
Jake Manning versus Jessica Havoc.
Now, here's the thing with Jake. I freaking love Jake Manning, and I think a lot of it has to do with Jake is just so heel 101, It's all basic, but it works.
I mean, if he wasn't a man version of a Boy Scout, he could be fully taken seriously because he's damn good. Maybe not the world's best wrestler in the ring, but in terms of being a heel and being an entertaining character, he's got a down pat.
That's my thought process there. It's not so much about in-ring accomplishments with Manning. It's more about gimmick over – he's more about the sizzle than the steak. And sometimes you need people like that. You need heat drawers like that. And frankly, Manning is one of the best at what he does in that regard. I think Jim Manning is supremely underrated. I've also really enjoyed the work that he's done with $5 Wrestling, as well as the stuff that he's done with all the other high spot stuff. Plus, he kept us from having to deal with that annoying little frick that we had to deal with on commentary last time.
I stopped paying attention when you mentioned Frank Train.
Well, you lose anyway. You made me lose my spot. All right. Because the only match that Jake Manning didn't commentate on this entire show was the one that he was in.
Yep. And that might also be the same for A.R. Fox. The only match that A.R. Fox didn't commentate was it.
No, that's not true. Because J.T. Davidson was in with Jake for a couple of matches, not just the one.
Okay, fair enough. So long story short, you have three commentators tonight? A.R. Fox, Jake Manning, and the Iron Manager, J.T. Davidson. Yes, that's actually his. Or was there a fourth somewhere?
Try that again.
I'm trying to think. Do we only have three commentators of Man Scout Jake Manning, A.R. Fox, and Iron Manager J.T. Davidson? Or do we have a fourth one in there somewhere?
I think it was only those three this entire night.
Hmm.
And you notice how much better the commentary was on this show? Shocker.
So, I will mention that.
I will say this much, and I'm probably going to catch heat for this. A.R. Fox is a lot more hood than I thought he was. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I'm still not touching it.
No, it's just everything that I've always seen with A.R. Fox, the way he conducts himself in the ring, the way that he usually conducts himself in interviews. He got in touch with his inner ghetto for the commentary on this one.
What, did he talk to Stevie Ray and go back to Harlem or something?
I think he might have. He showed up with Stevie Ray and Big T trying to join Harlem Heat 2K. Yeah, top that.
There, Fox replaced Big T in Harlem Heat 2K. Would have been more credible. Anyway, back to the actual match at hand, and Scott Jake Manning versus Jessica Havoc. Boy, this was weird. Because the good guy kind of good girl, I guess, in this case, kind of overpowers the bad guy. And I'm still not sold on Samantha Hines as a heel, also.
I'm having a very hard time going about this diplomatically because I don't want Sammy and or Jessica to kill me. I know they built this as intergender, but I'm like 90% sure Jessica's bigger than Jake Manning is.
At this point, she was. Hell, I'm almost 100% certain she wouldn't kick your ass because she would even agree.
And I say this as somebody who's really enjoyed Jessica's work over the years. But this is definitely the biggest I've ever seen her.
Have you seen modern pictures of her?
I have not.
All right. I'll have to show you a couple. Because, yeah, she's not exactly in peak physical condition here, but she's worked damn hard to get back to at least somewhere in a resemblance of Umbrella Corporation, Jessica Havoc. I wasn't a fan of the finish. Not because of Jake Manning having to cheat to win. That part, okay. Let's be honest. How much do you think Samantha Hines weighs?
A buck, if she's lucky.
She is a wrestler. Not terrible. She's pretty good in the ring. Let's be honest. Would she have really have made any bit of difference going down on Jake Manning's feet while his feet are on the ropes?
Probably not, especially not with the size differential between Samantha and Jessica.
Yeah, so I would actually end up seeing those two wrestle in a match.
What, Jake and Samantha, or Jessica and Samantha?
Jessica and Samantha.
I think the issue with that is I think fans would have a hard time getting behind Jessica with the size differential there and having Samantha as a heel.
Luckily, when I went to see that, it was flipped. So, all was well there.
All right, fair enough. All told, what were your thoughts on the match itself, though?
A lot of sizzle, very little steak.
I think that was kind of the point, though. I think that they intentionally did as little as necessary in order to drive home the point that Jake Manning is, and I pardon the phraseology here, a cheating asshole.
Fair enough. Because Samantha interferes, Jake constantly stops to check the book. You know, anytime Jessica's on offense, she's just beating the high holy hell out of him. You know, Jake has to constantly cheat to get back into the match, and then Jake ends up winning, thereby proving that men are superior to women. By cheating.
I will say Jake did have a pretty funny line about Samantha being in shoes there, because there were no suitable kitchens in Iowa for her to be barefoot in. That made me laugh.
The hell let Jeff Jarrett into this company?
That's J-E-F-F-J-A-F-F 4,000 guitars.
Never drew a dime.
And we move on to the A.R. Fox scramble.
Wait, I've got one more. How do you spell Jeff Jarrett? Capital G, double O, double N, double E. Gone. Goonie. Alrighty. A.R. Fox, Matthew Palmer, Jason Kay, Matt Fitch, Davey Vega, Darren DeNiro, Kurt Stallion, and Ethan Case.
Okay, so, off the top of my head, I'm familiar with five of these gentlemen.
Same as me, and I'm guessing it's the same five.
A.R. Fox, Kurt Stallion, yep. Matthew Palmer, Davey Vega, Matt Fitchett.
Four out of five.
I'm assuming not Matthew Palmer for you. Who in his place? Ethan Case?
Actually, no, I do know Palmer. It's Jason Kane instead of Kurt Stallion.
Well, I know Kurt Stallion from the first Wrestling Revolver show that we covered. He was in the A.R. Fox Invitational at that show as well.
No, fair enough. I had already known of Jason Cade because he's kind of in that Ohio crew a little bit. Because let's be honest, much like every Samoan wrestler knows each other, every wrestler from Ohio knows each other, apparently.
We'll talk more about that in the next match. But anyways, specifically, I know Matthew Palmer, Davey Vega, and Matt Fitchett from Anarchy Championship Wrestling out of Texas. Matthew Palmer is a former Anarchy Heavyweight Champion as the centerfold Matthew Palmer. Davey Vega and Matt Fitchett are better known as a tag team in this area because up in AIW they work as the Sex Bombs. But Vega has also gotten an established reputation as a singles wrestler in your area because I do believe at one point he was and may still be the Heritage Champion.
Who, Vega?
Yes.
Heritage Championship changed a couple of times.
But at one point, Vega was the Heritage Champion for All American Wrestling.
Yes, and not only that, Fitchett and Vega were the tag team champion. That's the besties in the world.
Oh, so they changed it from the Sex Bombs to the besties in the world?
Maybe still in AIW. I don't know about that, but AAW is the best.
All right, fair enough.
And there's one other reason that I know Matthew Palmer.
Listening.
His fiance.
I have no idea who his fiance is.
If I'm not mistaken, it's Ember Moon.
Palmer and a really? Okay.
I believe Palmer proposed in the middle of the ring at her last Anarchy show. I could be wrong about that, but I believe that's what happened.
What is with wrestlers proposing in the ring all the time nowadays?
At least when Palmer took with Ember Moon, it's more believable than the one that I got to witness live. Anyway,
let's get back to the Fox Open Invitational Scramble match. All right, so 13 minutes and 16 seconds.
Real quick. AR Fox Open Invitational Scramble.
Thank you, because it's apparently I don't speak English when it comes to AR Fox. But apparently, when it comes to commentary later on the show, AR Fox doesn't speak English either.
Yeah. So apparently, you can only get in if you're invited, but everyone's invited.
But that's all, folks. All right, moving on. Let's talk about the match itself. All right, so obviously the big spot I want to talk to you about is the super kick spot. What did you think of it?
All 752 super kicks?
Okay, that may be a slight exaggeration on your part. 750.
Okay, 760. I do agree with you. The super kick is oversaturated now. Especially with the fact that you could argue that Aleister Black and NXT, Tommy End, for those who don't watch NXT, this finisher is essentially a super kick.
His finisher is actually known as a capoeira kick, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay, but you get the idea. So it's hard to take that seriously as a finisher when, as I mentioned, there's a complete oversaturation of super kicks, which I still stick to. Thank you, Young Bucks. You could hurt you. Thank you, Bucky. You know, just wrestling in general has moved to a very super kick happy style now. And yeah, it does come to points. You know, we're not the Irish Shawn Michaels anymore. I get picked, but give it some credibility.
I think it's just an oversaturation due to the fact that pretty much everybody uses it. I mean, it's a good move when done properly. It looks great when done properly. The problem is there are a whole lot of people who don't do it properly, and it looks like crap. I actually thought the super kick, the 8-way super kick was a nice pick. I personally enjoyed that. What I didn't care for was the obvious choreography at the start of the match. I understand that wrestling is a sport and only its pseudo is form. It's sports entertainment. Even how you want to look at it, it's predetermined. The action is either planned out in advance or called in the ring. Call it what you will. But at the same time, I like some semblance of credibility. When you have everybody pairing off the way that they all did to start the match in multiple formats, and it ran for a solid minute with everybody pairing off that way, it bothers me. I'm sorry. It just bothers me.
Obviously.
That being said, let's talk about the finish here with AR Fox pinning Jason Cade with that cutthroat brainbuster. Not only did he pin him with the cutthroat brainbuster, he actually hit him with Lo Main Payne right into the cutthroat brainbuster. I'm of the opinion that Lo Main Payne needs to be a finish in and of itself. Agree or disagree?
I'm surprised it's not.
I think that that move is well known enough by independent wrestling fans that you really didn't need to follow it up with anything. If you would have went straight off of the top rope with Romain Payne there, that would have been enough for me to buy that as the finish there without having to add the cutthroat brainbuster as well.
Now, for those that may not know, the Romain Payne is, I believe, a springboard Spanish fly?
Yes, a springboard flipping Uranagi. Paul Burchill C4, but off of a springboard with the opponent crotched on the top turnbuckle.
I think that may have actually made it even worse of a description. I would have just stuck with springboard Spanish fly.
Well, Paul Burchill called it the C4.
Yes, but he also did it standing on the top rope.
Actually, Paul Burchill did it standing in the middle of the ring.
Oh, that's true, he did. Yeah, anyway. Your
thoughts on the cutthroat brainbuster?
Dangerous. But, I mean, any brainbuster you do is dangerous, so, you know, that's not really saying much.
I'm trying to look on his Wikipedia page and see if it has a name. According to what I'm seeing right now, it does not.
I think there's some places that he actually does use Romain Payne as his finisher. If he doesn't, it's a Romain Payne into a 450. Because I know I've seen AR5 here in Chicago win matches via the 450, usually following up with Romain Payne. There's a lot of, as those Polish people say, tchotchke here, kind of useless stuff. But I can't say I wasn't entertained by the match. I thought it was, you know, a decent match. Kind of did suffer from the WWE booking again. You know, I will say that. Instead of three, you have eight. And I think at most you had four in the ring at a time here. And everybody else is fighting on the outside. Granted, yeah, it's much harder to do with eight people in this case. But other than that, I really have no major complaints about it. Like, none at all.
This is the match that put Wrestling Revolver on the map, in my opinion, because of Zachary Wentz's dive at the first show. I think that this was a strong follow-up to the first one that they had at the original show here. I don't know if it was as good as the original, but more than competent enough to stand on its own volitions.
Fair enough. All right. So, moving on. Funny you mentioned Zachary Wentz. Nice segue.
Done on purpose.
Oh, sure. As Zachary Wentz teams with Desmond Xavier, if you follow other companies, the unleashed Desmond Xavier, taking on former Irish Airborne, now OI, CRK, Jake, and Dave Chris. Actually, it's, depending on what company you go to, the King of Dayton, Dave Chris, and the artist, Jake Chris.
OI4K, for those of you that don't know, is Ohio is for Killers.
And for those that really don't know, although you might, that's kind of them just being the OI4K is really, it's part of a larger group that I believe involves Jake's wife / Dave's sister-in-law, Nevaeh, also includes Jessica Havoc, Sammy Callahan, and pretty much any Ohio wrestler there is. Except for Dave and Jake's opponent, Desmond Xavier and Zachary Wentz.
Oh, no, I'd say they're kind of involved with OI4K as well. I mean, they're definitely involved here, talking to, involved in this particular match. And I think that these are two guys, I think that these are two guys that Dave and Jake know well, hence why the match was worked as well as it was, in my opinion.
I think Dave and Jake may, I think Jake and Dave may have had a hand in training these two. Zachary Wentz, relative newcomer, still, to wrestling. Desmond Xavier, relative newcomer. I would make the argument, though, between the two, I think Desmond's picked it up quicker, and I would say Desmond's a better wrestler, but that's having seen more of him than I have of Wentz. This match is a Lucha Extreme Tornado Tag. So it's a tornado tag match, no rules. Oh, I don't think it's false count anywhere. There's no disqualification, no count out. And let's be honest, the stipulation was added for one move.
Oh, absolutely. The dive off of the rock wall by Zachary Wentz.
Yes. Because for some reason, the Seth Flag Defense Center has to have a 25-foot-tall rock climbing wall.
Why? Because of course they do.
Because reasons.
Desmond Xavier was trained by Earl the Pearl, Rich Myers, and Ronnie Zucco at Maryland Championship Wrestling, sir.
Oh, wow, I'm way too long. All right, perfect. All right, never mind that part.
I just looked it up on Stake Match, which, by the way, a lot of our research is done through Wikipedia. Obviously, you can find Wikipedia on your own, but if you're not familiar with it, www.cagematch.net, one of the best wrestling website resources there is in the world.
However, make sure your Google Translate is on.
Cagematch.net is the American version, sir.
I still get a lot of German stuff on it, so, ha!
Well, it just doesn't like you, so ha! All right, moving on. Carry on.
I thought this was actually a really good match. I thought these four worked very well together. I still do hold to, I think Desmond is further ahead than Wentz is. Not to say Wentz is bad, but I think Desmond kind of carried the lead more, and Wentz kind of sold a lot. And did his dive. You know, and I believe even J.T. Davidson got in the match as well. He was accompanying Elias Marquez.
J.T. Davidson at one point broke up a pinfall by Desmond Xavier. He was then pulled into the ring and double super kicked because why the hell not?
Because there haven't been enough super kicks. See our point, folks? So, Jake and Dave end up picking up the win via the double stomp tombstone. Don't try to find the nail on that. I can't find
the I'm going to check right now and see what I can find. You go ahead and introduce the next contest while I look.
You don't have any more thoughts about this? You haven't said much.
No, I gave my thoughts here. I agree with you in the fact that this was made up the way that it was in order to allow for Zachary Wentz's dive. The ring announcer completely flubbed up the introductions. Apparently, Zachary Wentz is Desmond Xavier's opponent.
Okay, good. I did notice that.
But because they were talking about how J.T. Davidson was talking about how Jake and Dave were the best to Jave and Dake were the best to come out of Ohio. That was on purpose.
Go to hell.
And the ring announcer said that he found two boys from Ohio that are just as good, if not better. He introduces Desmond Xavier and then introduces his opponent, his partner. In Zachary Wentz, yes. Sorry. Frog.
Yeah. So, 5 out of 6 people in that ring are professional.
Killing spree.
I thought I heard a different name. Okay.
Diving double stomp by Dave to an opponent's buttocks into a spike kneeling reverse pile driver by Jake.
Okay.
When they were the Irish Airborne, it was called Irish Coffee.
All right, I'm kind of glad that it's Killing Spree.
And then, obviously, the Irish Air Raid, which got a 2 earlier in the match with the Death Valley Driver across the knees after the double stomp.
Yeah.
That is still the Irish Air Raid. All right, back to the match itself real quick here, just to give a couple quick thoughts. If you're going to do a match like this, you need to make sure that you have more than one floor camera. Because there were several things that clearly got missed.
I think the show was a three-camera setup. One hard cam, two mobile cams. I could have sworn I saw one of the camera guys running back and forth. So I think they did have another camera on the floor, but it may have been dead or batteries or something during this match. Because I could have sworn I saw that they had a three-camera set. So I think they did have more than one camera. They just had one on the floor.
I noticed that this match in particular had several big spots missed that got oohs and ahs from the crowd because there was no camera over there by them when those particular spots happened. That's just the one thing I wanted to point out.
Okay. All righty, moving on. Caleb Conley versus Dirty Andy Dalton.
I'm going to be entirely honest with you. I don't have a whole lot to say about this match. I was not impressed by either gentleman.
All righty. So we already mentioned Schiavone. Now I'm going to mention Pritchard. This is what Bruce Pritchard would call the popcorn match.
100%.
Look at the next match after this. Look at the match before this. I know of Caleb Conley. Haven't really seen him wrestle too much. Never been super impressed by him, and it's now Impact Superstar, Caleb Conley. Wonder if he's going to India with them.
Isn't he the new Suicide or something?
For sure.
Kayfabe? Whatever. Moving on.
No. You know what I pay attention to on Impact.
Yes, I'm aware. Mostly the women. I'm aware.
And that's Xavier.
All right, I know Caleb Conley from the scene in Evolve, and I have the first, 12 Evolve shows, so I really don't get a whole lot into the run of the scene. It's just the first couple of matches with them and their manager, who I won't name because I dislike him that much. And it's not an
Charlie Orlando. Charlie Orlando.
It rhymes, it's Larry D. No, wait, that's too obvious. L. Dallas.
Wow, go with a Simpsons joke, eh? I used that same one yesterday at work.
Actually, it was an Alex Shelley joke as well. He was cutting a promo at a CZW show that I was watching, and he was talking about a company out in Mid-South, the owner, who has a reputation for being something of a hard-ass, Ian R. No, that's too obvious. I'm rotten.
I'm guessing he probably mooched that from The Simpsons, because The Simpsons won key way before that.
I'm sure it probably did, and Shelley is a known cartoon fan, so it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. It is, yeah, so, anyway. There's really not much to talk about. This was kind of a breather match before you got to the sub-main event and the main event. Conley picked up the win. Eh?
Yeah. Not good, not bad, just there.
I'm not going to make the joke.
You're damn right you're not going to make the joke. I've seen better from Conley. I only have one previous Andy Dalton match, and it's against Rachel Summerlin, so I can't really give you much of a description as far as that goes, because it was so long ago that I watched it.
Anarchy?
Correct.
No, it did. Lucky guess. Well, it couldn't be Andy Dalton at Shimmer, so that was the only other company I could really think of.
Well, I'm sure there are other Texas feds that they work together, but no, this specifically was Anarchy.
Hey. You laugh. Eddie Kingston's been on a Shimmer DVD.
As a wrestler?
Kind of.
All right, I'm calling shenanigans and we're moving on.
He wasn't in a match.
Let's move on, shall we? All right, so you know how we bitched? When we first did the original debut show for Pro Wrestling Revolver, or The Wrestling Revolver, excuse me. I keep wanting to say Pro Wrestling Revolver, but it's The Wrestling Revolver. We bitched about how there weren't long enough matches. Do you remember this?
Oh, absolutely.
This next match kind of made me eat my words, because there's no good reason to me that 2017 Chavo Guerrero should be going 20 minutes.
I was fine with the tag match going over 15. I was more than fine with that, because I believe you mentioned that it was over 15.
15 minutes and 11 seconds.
Yeah, I was fine with that. Chavo versus Bardic, what? No.
Well, not to mention the first...
their turn.
Not to mention the first, like, 5 minutes of the match is nothing but fluff and stuff.
Too much sizzle, no steak.
Yeah, really.
This was all, once again, Polish phrase, tchotchke. It was useless crap. You know, with Chavo just trying to get the crowd, not even behind him, but behind each other's crowd, and give the mic to the kid, and, you know, get the kid to chant each of them. Somewhere Kalisto is crying. But what do people see in Marty the Boss that I don't see? You're a huge Lucha Underground fan. What am I missing?
It's personality. It's never been anything about his in-ring work.
It's more about his personality, more about his character. He's very character-driven, and he's had a couple of standout bouts in Lucha Underground, one of them against Killshot, who most independent wrestling fans would know better as Shane Strickland.
King of Swerve.
So, he's had the matches in Lucha Underground to back it up, but it's when it comes to Marty the Moth Martinez or Martin Casas, which technically he would be Martin Casas here because Marty the Moth Martinez is copyright trademark Lucha Underground. It's more about character and the development thereof than anything he's actually capable of inside of the ring. And this match right here is a graphic illustration of that. There's no reason for Martin Casas to be going 20 minutes either.
I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where the match was cool to see. You know, I'm somewhat of a Chavo Guerrero fan, not my favorite in the Guerrero family by any means, but Chavo, maybe. You know, but this match just seemed too long. You know, granted, yeah, it was great that it wasn't, you know, I'm trying to think of how long the main event to the first Revolver show was. 11 minutes? It's something super short. But this probably should have had about 5 minutes chopped off of it.
The 5 minutes at the start of the match with all the gas and the gaga and the goofiness, or how was it the Polish word you used again?
Tchotchke.
Yeah, that. You could cut that 5 minutes from this match and give it to the main event of Sammy and Brian Cage, which ended when it seemed like it was just getting going.
Imagine that. That's the second time that's happened.
Yeah, because the same thing kind of happened between Billy Gunn and John Morrison, too.
Yep. So, Chavo ends up picking up the victory.
I mean, I understand the point of Chavo Guerrero on the show here. It's not so much about Chavo, it's more about his family, it's more about the legacy, specifically of his uncle. Because you'll notice that when Chavo comes in, there's a series of spots that are expected. You expect the Three Amigos, you expect the Eddie Chant, you expect the Frog Splash. That is exactly what we got to finish this contest to send everybody home, well, into the main event, happy, anyways.
Yeah. So, you know, fair enough. Wasn't a huge fan of the match, but it wasn't terrible. Not the worst match on the card, but just too long.
Agreed.
So, we'll keep it at that. But it is main event time. Once again, a Lucha Underground, well, now, Lucha Underground German match. All right, I'm just going to repeat it just because I can, and it's the only way I know to introduce it. The Effing Machine, the Wolverine, Mr. GMSI, Brian Cage, versus the Worldwide Desperado, the Death Machine, Sammy Callahan. All right, I'm going to make one joke about this. Wow, the owner of the company looks at himself in the main event and is bad. Done. So, and again, this could have been a way to test to see how he could fight against guys from Lucha Underground, as not long after this, Sami Callihan would debut on Lucha Underground as Jeremiah Crane. And we probably should also mention...
You completely forgot what I told you earlier about this not supposed to be Sammy originally.
I know. But they could have ended up switching it. Like, yeah, I'll jump in there. So. But as you mentioned, it was originally supposed to be Ray Phoenix. Or just Phoenix at that point. I honestly don't remember who called the name changed.
He was just Phoenix in Lucha. He's always been just Phoenix in Lucha Underground. I think he uses Ray Phoenix on the Indies in order to be able to use it and not violate his Lucha Underground contract.
The same reason why Pentagon Jr. is now Penta El Cerro Miguel.
That's the exact point of reference that I was about to bring up.
Yeah, so both have the same idea. So, much like Sammy's match with Bob Holly at the first show, this is pretty much how hard can you hit your opponent? Because they beat the hell out of each other. My God, Brian Cage jacked. It's like, it's a point that gets brought up anytime we cover one of his matches, but my God, he's jacked. He's jacked. Huge.
Oh. Well, it is as Excalibur would put it, Brian Cage is a machine. For lack of better phraseology at this point.
Yeah. He's got to be on something.
No comment. Mostly because I don't want to be held liable.
I know.
I believe there was a reason that he left the WWE and it had something to do with the wellness policy.
As Gregory Iron put it in AAW, I would share my juice with you, but you have plenty yourself.
Wow.
When he cut that promo, he was actually holding a juice box. So, and then Brian Cage needed to kill him, so.
Yes.
MDK to Gregory Iron.
All right, the match itself.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed kind of like a PWG sprint, like an early card PWG sprint. The problem is it's the main event of the show. Main event of the first show, 11 minutes. Main event of the second show, 12 minutes. Not a good trend.
Well, once again, how much of that can you put up to the sudden change in the match?
Well, yeah, I would imagine that's probably part of it when Cage shows up expecting to work Phoenix and ends up working Sammy instead. But at the same time, you would think that they would have worked with each other a couple of times out and, well, either in AAW or AIW or Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, that they should be familiar enough to be able to put together, you would think, anywhere from 15 to 20 in their sleep.
Yeah, like you almost wish that the times of the previous match and this one were flipped.
Absolutely. I think Sami Callihan and Brian Cage for 20 minutes would have been phenomenal.
You know, it's like, I'm going to bring it up a little bit. Since Sami has left the WWE, I think it's fair to say that he has had an ungodly career resurgence. And one of the main things that I think has caused that, or one of the main reasons to help that, is the fact that he's been going into the ring for 15, 20 minutes and having great matches. I very distinctly remember him and Tommaso Ciampa, I believe, last June. It was somewhere between May and July. I think it was June. Went out and beat the high holy hell out of each other for almost 40 minutes. I think the match time ended up being like 35 minutes, if you include intros and everything, was almost 40 minutes. So for Sami Callihan to go out in the main event and have a match that's only 12 minutes long, that's really weird. Really weird. So,
well, I also have to question how long the show had been running at this point as well, because the runtime on the show is 2 hours and 2 minutes, and that's with a lot of, like, entrances and stuff edited out.
Hell, I think almost everything's edited out except for the Y4K's promo at the end.
Yeah, where they kick Wentz and Xavier in the balls.
And just say, no, we're kidding, you suck.
What a couple of...
What?
What? No, I think the thing with the Sami and Cage is, I do believe that there was an issue with Sami and that a lot of his matches on the Independence once he came out of the WWE, once he was done being Solomon Crow, were going very, very long. But he's become more known now for the Sami Sprint. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can understand that.
He's become known now for the Sami Sprint, which are these short, hard-hitting matches that don't last nearly the length of time that they usually do. At the same time, though, when you are the figurehead of the company and when you're in the main event of the company, I think you owe it kind of to the fans to put out more than 12 minutes for their main event contest. That being said, I don't think there's any reason to complain about the 12 minutes of action that we did get between these two, because, as I said, these two could do 15 to 20 in their sleep. 12 is no sweat.
Except for Brian Cage being so big that pretty much anything he does, he sweats.
Well, yeah. That apron superplex is still one of the most ridiculous things I have ever seen.
It's nice to see
Cesaro lift it and bring it to a mainstream audience, but Cage was the first one I saw do it, and God, that's just unnecessary. Once again, to borrow a line from Excalibur, Brian Cage is a machine.
I keep missing the, like, ing part of that when you do it like that, so I keep thinking that's all I used it. F machine, not F in machine. Which makes it a hell of a lot more awkward.
Speaking of awkward, let's up the awkward level and go right from that into the big finish, shall we?
I think we have to ask the fans on Earth to judge Underground about that.
Big finish, Patrick.
Too far?
Big finish, Patrick.
You're not really helping. Going from Brian Cage as an F machine to the big finish. You're not helping.
Can we get back to this show, please? I want to be done. We're almost there. And Sean wonders why our shows always run 2 freaking hours. This is why.
Big finish time. Best and worst match in the cash and the trash. What's your worst match of the show?
My worst match of the show is Caleb Conley and Andy Dalton. It's not so much that it's the worst match on the show, it's just there. There's no viable stakes. There's no reason for the crowd to be invested in the match because they're coming off of the insane tag match from the match before it and getting ready for the two big main events to force come after it. It suffers from placement, and it suffers from the fact that, let's be honest here, most independent wrestling fans probably don't know who Caleb Conley and Andy Dalton are. Patrick, your worst match on the show.
It's not a bad match.
I will hang up right now.
It's just a match. It's just there.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
It's the same one. It's Caleb Conley versus Dirty Andy Dalton. We're talking about the one match in a four-match block that we couldn't even really think of anything. What does that tell you about the match?
Like, I have no issues with Caleb Conley. I've seen Caleb Conley before in his runs with in his outings with Evolve, and I was actually impressed by what I saw from the Scene. I know the manager of the Scene gets a lot of heat, and frankly, he should, because Larry Dallas is a piece of crap. And I don't mean that in a professional standpoint. I mean that in a personal perspective. Larry Dallas is a piece of crap. And if you want my reasons for this, I will tell you my reasons for this when we get off the air.
Okay.
But anyways, so moving on.
I have a feeling we'll agree on this one, too. What's your best match?
I think I'm going to go with the tag match, OI4K versus Lance and Xavier.
Damn it.
I really enjoyed the format there. Like I said, I wish the camera wouldn't have kind of, if there was a third camera, I wish it wouldn't have cracked out during this particular match. But all told, these guys, the four guys worked well together, and it's clear they know each other very well because they were willing to trust each other with some of the stiffest shots that we would see on the entirety of the show. Patrick, your best match?
Once again, the exact same. Anyone that knows me, especially anyone that he, like, knows that I'm a big fan of OI4. I've been a big fan of theirs for many years. I've turned into a very big fan of Desmond Xavier as well. I thought that all four of them, Zachary Wentz included, I'm not a huge fan of Zachary Wentz because I haven't seen a lot of Zachary Wentz yet, but, you know, sometime in the future, or if I may become a big fan of his. I thought this was a phenomenal match, and definitely, for me, the best match on the card. Yeah, I kind of felt bad that it felt like the only reason for the stipulation was so that Wentz could take the dive off the rock wall, conveniently placed rock wall. Nice of J.T. Davidson to also get involved in catching him, because he did. He ran right in there, right as Wentz was about to take the dive. But these four definitely put on a very, very good match. I would put it up there, and I would actually say it's probably the best of the two shows that we've covered, the two Revolver shows, obviously. I would definitely put it up there with it.
I would have to go back because I think I would put it just slightly behind Michael Elgin and PJ Black.
Well, fair enough. I thought it was a great match, definitely the best match on the show. Alrighty. Cash and trash. So what is your cash for this show?
My cash for the show is the fact that they stepped up commentary for the show. I think the commentary was a lot better done than it was on the first show, and it's significantly noticeable that they took the time to actually listen to the fans, and that one idiot that ruined the commentary for the three matches that he was on the first show had nothing to do with this particular one.
Sidebar for just a second. This will only take a second, and we're running fairly quickly here anyway. Sidebar. After we did the first show review, I told Sammy Callahan, or I talked to Sammy Callahan at, you know, the next AEW show, and told him about that. And he asked me, what do you guys think? I said the wrestling was great,
I said, you know, maybe a couple of things about the look could improve. And I said, there's one thing that drove us nuts. He cuts me off. He knew exactly what I was about to say. And he goes, I hated that asshole too. He knew exactly what I was about to say. And he goes, that guy will never be back. That was part of the sponsorship. That was part of the deal. One of the sponsors insisted that he be part of commentary. I don't know if it was another wrestling thing or what, but he cuts me off and says, he will never be on a show again. So, obviously they listen. So,
I couldn't wrap my head around how horrendously awful that dude was at the first show. And thankfully, Jimmy being a man of his word, there was nothing to deal with him in regards to the second show. I think Jake Manning added a lot to the broadcast table. And I think that JT Davidson added a lot as well. I'm kind of indifferent on A.R. Fox as an announcer, but I think A.R. Fox had his moments at the table as well. A lot of what happened with AR is it came off weird knowing the persona that we've seen portrayed with him else in other places, if that makes sense.
True. For me, my cash is the overall improvement on the look, on the aesthetic. Because when we did the first, as a matter of fact, I think that was actually my trash for the last show that we reviewed. I said that it was too bright. I complained about the graphics constantly playing, and there were a couple other things. For the second show, they dimmed down the lights, thank God. So I thought it actually looked a hell of a lot better. And I think they changed something with the screen, because to me it was not as noticeable. It was not as annoying to me the second time. You could still see it with the ads and the sponsors and everything playing in the background, but it wasn't as noticeable to me as it was the first time. So, for me, the aesthetic and the overall improvement of the show is the cash. So, you can tell that they are always striving to improve the experience, not only for the fans at the show, but for fans watching at home. So, that's my cash, is their constant improvement on the experience.
It makes sense, too, because one of the things that you want to do when you're a young company, and as we mentioned, this is only their second show. Their third and their fourth shows just recently happened. Their fourth show is a split show with Wrestle Circus out of Texas.
Oh, wait, which one? What number?
Third and fourth.
Their fourth was the split show.
That's what I said. The third show was in Orlando, and then the fourth show was the split show with Wrestle Circus.
Okay, sorry, I misheard. How was that then? What?
This is a company still in its relative infancy. And one of the things that you'll notice is a lot of promoters, especially when they're wrestlers first, tend to be very set in their ways when it comes to doing things. This is a prime example of a company that is willing to take the advice of its fan base and help better itself to improve its own product by taking the criticism and employing it to make the next show better, and the next show better, and the next show better. That is how companies keep fan bases, and that is how companies pick up new fans, by establishing the fact that they care what their fan base has to say.
All right. So, Harry, what is your trash for the show?
So we talked about the improved aesthetics of the show. We talked about the fact that the lighting was better, the commentary was better, the overall stage setup was better, there were no annoying advertisements playing in the background, at least no full-on video advertisements playing in the background. I still saw a couple of little advertisements here and there on the Tron, but it's nothing too major, because it was just like a sponsor's name with wrestling in the background, which I'm okay with. Got to make the money somehow, right?
Stu Hansen and his car dealership.
Yeah.
Chrysler.
I have no problem.
Chrysler's? Dodge.
Sorry. I have no problem with doing that, doing just the name of a sponsor with wrestling in the background. It doesn't take anything away from the match, especially if you're not going to broadcast anything on the Tron during the match itself anyways. Rather, it was a case of the camera crapping out, or rather it was a case of not having a camera ready for the match itself.
I was very disappointed by the lack of a secondary camera to follow the action inside of the OI 4K versus Scarlett and Graves match.
Fair enough.
I think that missing as much of the action as they did, because they missed action on both sides, between Wentz and Dave being paired off, as well as Jake and Xavier being paired off. They caught some sick bumps that those guys took in the crowd there. The one back suplex on the bench, like, it hurt like hell. But there were other things that the camera didn't pick up that the crowd was oohing and aahing about that as a viewer I would have liked to have seen as well.
That's how they get you to go to the show. If you want to see all the action, buy a ticket.
You know, the sad thing is you're probably not wrong saying that.
No, I think it was just the camera cracking out.
Yeah, but I know certain announcers that would probably spin it as, well, if you want to make sure you catch everything, you got to be there.
We're out of time, folks. I mean,
Giovanni's got a chair. Patrick, what's your trash for tonight's show that we're covering here? Wrestling Revolver Iowa Goes Lucha.
Boy, I'm going to catch crap for this. AR Fox's commentary. That's why I didn't really talk about it anytime you brought it up. I thought out of everything that was a step forward from the first show, I thought his was a little bit of a step back. And not even the stuff you mentioned earlier. But he's going up for a suplex. Oh! And he would do that constantly. I think at one point, I'm pretty sure he did it four times in less than 2 minutes during the tag match. And it drove me nuts. Was not a fan of Aaron Fox's commentary on this night, not even including some of the comments that he did make. So, it's cool, you know, if he's the one offering to be a commentator, or if someone's asking him to do it, or whatever, you know, it's different. I hope he gets better with practice and everything, but on this particular night, really not a fan at all.
So, no, that's a fair assessment. Like I said, I think that there's a sense of urbanism to A.R. Fox and the way that he conducted himself at this show that might turn people off. Because this isn't the A.R. Fox that I've seen handling himself before. Because the A.R. Fox that I'm familiar with was the one that was in, like, that was in a bowl feuding with Sammy. That was in CZW feuding with Sammy and DJ Hyde. And that was a very well-mannered, very well-spoken, very literate, very, how do I put this? He was very competent on the microphone. This seemed like more of A.R. Fox, the fan on commentary, and while I'm okay with color commentators getting involved in the matches, I think that when they go into charades like that where they're oohing and aahing at every little thing, it takes away from the contest itself. I know I have a bad habit of doing that during matches as well sometimes, too, so I really can't be too hard on the guy for it, but I can understand why it would off-put you.
I had a 5-year-old kid get mad at me at TakeOver because I got into the UK title match too much. A 5-year-old kid.
Well, that little kid needs to learn to start enjoying wrestling for what it is.
Usually at the end of all shows, I end up apologizing in case I get too into the show. And that little kid just goes, "No, you shout too much." I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I would frankly rather go and have a good time for the money that I spent for my ticket than just sit there with my hands in my pockets.
Yep. So. All right.
Let's rate this bad boy, shall we?
Yep. One final thing before we go, Harry. What is your final rating for Wrestling Revolver Iowa Ghost Chuck?
Why do I always have to go first on these? I went first on every single one tonight. You're doing your rating first.
Excuse me, I'm the host. My read.
Don't you try to trump card me. It ain't going to work.
All right, then we're done.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Just answer the damn question, Ketsa. Can't let me have one. You had the other
36.
Fine.
All right. I'll give you this one. To me, hell of a lot more good than bad. Like we said.
Agreed.
Overall experience, definite improvement. My, gripes about AR Fox's commentary aside. Main event was a little short for my taste, but once again, just like with Sammy's match at the first one, while it's a short time, they packed as much as they could into it. While maybe the match was too long, the sub-main event wasn't terrible. The tag match I thought was great. The scramble, once again, very good. The kind of triple threat, once again, also very good. Sure, you get quite a bit of nonsense on this, but while maybe it takes away a little bit on some matches, I think on the overall, it's not terrible. The crowd was into it the whole night. Commentary for the most part was very good, so I'm actually very pleased with what I saw. To the point that I will actually give this a 7.
Alright. Opening contest. Hold on, I gotta pull up my results again here real quick. Give me a second.
Trevor Lee and Darby Allin.
Opening contest was a little bit of a disappointment knowing what Trevor Lee is capable of. Moving on a little bit further on into the show, we're going to skip right ahead to Jake Manning versus Jessica Havoc, which I actually really enjoyed for what it was. And I think that has a lot to do with me being as big of a fan of Jake Manning as I am. I really enjoy the old school heel style, and I think there are very few in wrestling these days that do it as well as Manning does. The triple threat match was not bad to me, but I think of what might have been had Shima Zion been able to perform, because I've had the opportunity to work with Zima before. I am a huge fan of his work, and I think that he would have added a lot to the show, specifically with the whole Lucha Libre theme that they were kind of going for. The tag match was fantastic. The scramble match, while a little bit sketchy at the start due to the overly choreographed nature of the beginning, broke down into a match that became a lot of fun with a very good finish. The Sammy and Brian Cage match is a perfect example of the Sammy sprint that we talked about earlier. It is go in, get your stuff in, beat each other up, make it look good, and get out as quickly as you can while still giving the crowd their money's worth. I would have liked it to have been a little bit longer, especially being that it was the main event, but at the same time, I'm not going to hold it against them because, as you said, they packed a lot of action into that 12 minutes. My disapproval of the length of the match aside, I actually thought that Chavo and Martin and Marty, the Moth Martinez, Martin Casas, was good for the live crowd because they kept the fans emotionally invested in that match for the live crowd. So I think that match was more about the live crowd than it was about us watching at home on DVD. So I'm willing to give them a pass. I'm going to go a little bit higher than you did, Patrick. I'm going to give Iowa Ghost Lucha a 7.5.
Alrighty.
I know he's going to listen to this at some point. Keep up the good work, Sammy. It's a product worth watching. And if you want to, you can find more information about the company at WrestlingRevolver.com.
ProWrestlingRevolver.com.
Oh, thank you. I don't have the DVD in front of me. I put it inside of my DVD stack. Thank you for that.
I always bring the case with me when we're doing our show, for obvious reasons.
I usually have my notebook in front of me. It's off to the side now as I'm getting ready to call it here. Before we call it, though, tonight's episode of Wrestling Unwrapped, Wrestling Revolver presents Iowa Goes Lucha, Underground, has been brought to you by the Madhouse Toy Chest. stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest. If you're a fan of anything wrestling, DVDs, action figures, VHS tapes, magazines, posters, and more, you can find it inside of the Madhouse Toy Chest. In addition, you can find stuff from all kinds of other genres, video games, movies, Blu-rays, old school VHS tapes, books, Star Wars, Star Trek, superheroes. You can find pretty much anything you're looking for inside of the Madhouse Toy Chest. Mention that you heard this advertisement here on Wrestling Unwrapped, receive a free gift with your purchase. That is stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest. Jason Kunkel will hook you up.
And, of course, if you want to hear not only this one, but any more of our previous episodes or read any of our written reviews, one of these days we'll get back to it. One of these days. Be sure to check out Flash.
We were supposed to tonight, but unfortunately, one of us had plans come up that would require us to have to postpone.
I'm not saying that. Seriously, I'm not. Be sure to check out W2Mnet.com as we are a presentation of the W2M Network. Once again, we go back to the late night time slot. Next week, I think, as WWE presents Extreme Rules, because I think for some reason they have 3 pay-per-views in 5 weeks going on right now.
Yeah, we'll eventually get into a pattern with these Wrestling Unwrapped DVD reviews at some point. We're not sure when, but eventually.
Eventually. And as far as what we're going to cover in 2 weeks, stay tuned to the Facebook, because we haven't actually made a decision on that yet. So,
we're tossing around a couple of ideas. It'll be June 10th, I believe, or 11th will be the date. So, the prevailing thought, and this may be the one we go with, is we may go all the way back to 2005 and cover the original ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view.
As that would be an anniversary coming up.
It would be... I think it was June 12, 2005, so the anniversary would be 12 years the very next day.
Yeah. So that was the idea. Also, because one of us hasn't seen it yet, somehow, there was the idea tossed around of us doing the movie that led to David Arquette's WCW Champion.
Because we haven't handled enough 2000 WCW around here lately. Pass for now. Thank you. Thanks for listening, everybody. Patrick, send us home.
So be sure to check out the Wrestling Unwrapped Facebook page. We will be covering it 2 weeks. Next week, though, definitely WWE Extreme Rule. So, for Sean Garmer, and for Eric Rogers, I'm Patrick Tessa. Thank you to Wrestling Up as we do Wrestling Revolver. I am going to chat here on the W2S Network.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Catch you next week.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.